Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Vishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Page 70. Guru may be of two types, one who gives diksha with mantra, and one who gives spiritual instruction. They should be considered equal in importance by one who wants to advance quickly. It means if you don't want to advance quickly, then think that they're not the same. Like that. But if you want to advance quickly, understand they're the same. A person can accept only one Diksha Guru, but may have many Siksha Gurus who give Sambandha Gyan. The Sambandha Gyan or teachings are handed down in the Sampradaya from the founder Acharya of the Sampradaya. These original teachings and the founder Acharya of the Sampradaya should be worshipped with all respect. One should be loyal to his conclusions and instructions, not taking teachings from others. One should take as Siksha Guru only a person who is following faithfully the teachings of that founder Acharya. To take an initiation or teachings from a Mayavadi is useless. Thus, Guru, whether Siksha or Diksha, must be the servant of Krishna and an associate of the Lord eternally in Vrindavan, who has been especially empowered by Krishna. One should serve the Guru with great devotion, knowing him to be directly empowered by Krishna, the dearmost servant of Krishna, and one's own eternal spiritual guide. By such sincere service to the Guru, one can cross over the material ocean. Consequently, if one So the point is this: Krishna is the Guru, but Krishna comes to us through the spiritual master, right? Because Krishna is knowledge. He is Sambandha Gyan. He is Sambandha. He's everything. So the point is that we know Krishna because we know him through the spiritual master. That's how Krishna wants to be known. Otherwise, if you have, everybody has a direct relationship with you, what's the meaning, right? It's a matter of the variety that's there. It's important, right? What is special about grandchildren, right? Children are special, but grandchildren are more special. Why? Because they're the children's children. So great-grandchildren would be even more special. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. If one is servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, the farther back it goes, the more special it becomes. We have this idea, no, it has to be direct to get any benefit. That's just because we're so used to sensual interaction that if the sense doesn't touch the sense object, you're not getting any benefit. Right? As soon as the sense and the sense object are disconnected, there is no rasa. Right? So we're used to that this is how things work. And the other element, that if I control, then only can I be happy, can I enjoy it. Because if you're the controller, then you can be the enjoyer. If you're not the controller, then you're dependent. That means you're under someone else's care. And that if we don't have trust, then that's always going to be a problem. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
This paragraph about founder Acharya. It may seem a little externally, it may seem a little bit like we are becoming fanatics, that we should only stick to the line coming from this founder Acharya and not the science. Like,
why is that a problem? Who do you listen to? Your father or someone else's father? Yeah, so then what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? It's just a normal, human consideration.
But we don't have problem that others are in other line.
No, it's just, do you have a problem that your next door neighbor has a different father than you? And you know what is even more of a problem? The guy across the street also. You know, what's going on? Everybody on the whole street has a father other than yours.
Our father is more special.
Of course, but still it's different. So are you okay with that? Are you going around knocking on everybody's door? I'm sorry you had to be born from this other guy, but there's an opportunity you could, you know, come over and, you know, get some direction from my father, and this way make your life perfect.
Some people go like this.
Yeah, but every you know, culture and language has words for such people. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that the point is that being able to stay in a line, follow in a line, that's what impresses Krishna. Because otherwise, if one's moving here and there, why are you moving here and there? Because if Krishna is the guru and is coming down through, they're empowered. So why would he be going from one to the other? Unless you have your own purpose. Right? So it's your own consideration, not actually pleasing Krishna. Right? So that's why this principle of loyalty is there.
Right? As we discussed before, it may be that like some Ramanuja may join Gaudiya because he will see the opportunity to develop more deep devotion.
That's there, but the point is if you want the same thing, to go to some... It's not a matter of deeper devotion, it's a matter of particular taste. Right? In other words, if the Ramanuja is very attracted by Andal's teachings and is very attracted by Vrindavan and wants to pursue that, then by coming in contact with the Gaudiyas, then he may find that the taste that they're offering is... So therefore he would then continue with that siksha, but he wouldn't change his diksha. You know what I'm saying? The point is he's Vaishnava, so he's connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the man at work has friends, right? And then when he's at home, he has friends, the neighbors. So is there, do they, one has connection and the other doesn't? You know what I'm saying? Right? So the point is if the guy at the office with time becomes more close, right, then he may become a friend that, you know, is at his house. Does that make sense? So, but it doesn't mean it changes that connection. You know what I'm saying? But it just changes where he functions. Like Baladev didn't change his Madhva initiation. He changed the siksha.
Which was it?
As in Vidya Bhushan. Is that? So one has to see is that there you're going for a different taste, but if it's in the same, it's the same thing, then taking this one or that one, then that's the problem. You know what I'm saying? Like let's say you have two brothers. Okay? They have children. Right? Now, if the one brother, you know, his child is listening to his other brother, you know, as authority, he would feel bad. No? If it's intimate or close. Yes or no?
It depends. Like, if he tries to switch to the other one, maybe.
But that's what I'm saying. He spends more time, puts more faith in his uncle's direction than his own father's. Okay, now, what happens if they put a lot of faith in that in their grandfather's instruction? The fathers aren't going to complain. So in other words, if it's going up, then it doesn't matter. But if it's sideways, then you don't change. Because it's not a change, it's just going back farther to the root. You know what I'm saying? So that's why Vaikuntha to Goloka is fine, but Goloka to Vaikuntha, that would be a waste. Does that make sense?
Another point?
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada sometimes, I think after Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura states that Guru is either associate of Srimati Radharani or manifested representation of Lord Nityananda. It refers to the two types of Guru according to Rasas, if I remember properly. Is it like...
Who is explaining it?
If I remember properly, it's somewhere by Vishwanath Chakravarti explained. Can't hear. But, so anyway, there is a letter by Srila Prabhupada where he explains that Guru is of two types, either coming from associates of Radharani or manifested representation of Lord Nityananda. And I know that this is a general categorization. How far significant is it for us?
How far significant is it for us? Why you're worried?
It is like categorizing the, I would say, rather eternal. I'm trying to understand this categorization.
Categorization means the guru is representing Krishna, right? So that line may come down through. You could say that mood of Radharani or that mood of Balaram, right? But it's not that, it's not any way coming down through Radharani. But it just means instead of Radharani, it's coming down through one of her expansions that's connected to Balaram, Nityananda, right? So the aspect is the emphasis more on the, you know, the knowledge, the understanding, that aspect of it, you know, the form of it more, or is it more on the practice and the mood? You could also take it that way. Because Nityananda would represent the, in this case, the Sambandha, right? So you could take it like that also. Does that make sense? Because then you're looking at Nityananda means you're becoming freed from material entanglement, material attachment. Because unless you become free from the attachment, how do you become attached to Krishna? So you're also saying is that the element of the retraction is more prominent, or the attachment is more prominent. You could also qualify it that way. Does that make sense? Or it can be just who is giving that mercy to the spiritual master. Right? Same teaching, just who is giving that mercy. Does that make sense? Like that. Then you can look at it in the thing of the line meaning, are they representing, you know, is the idea to develop the mood of service like the cowherd boys or like the cowherd girls? Does that make sense? But the point is if one is attached to material energy, it doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Yes.
Maharaj, what here, when it refers to the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Guru, they are considered equal. Does it refer in the Shiksha Guru, as you explained before, to the three levels of Shiksha Guru, the Adi Guru?
It means Adi Guru, of course, is because he is the foundation of the instruction or that potency for the Diksha Guru. But here it's also meaning the Siksha, meaning one who is on that level of the Siksha Guru, meaning that they are also taking responsibility like that. But it also will mean the principle that instruction is as valid as the ritual of being connected to the Sampradaya through the Diksha process. Does that make sense? So one can get valuable instructions from anywhere, like that. So in other words, it's the Siksha that's important. By putting that emphasis there, then one's own Diksha Guru, one will see more in that light of Siksha rather than Diksha. Because right? If it's Siksha, we tend to use the intelligence more. we tend to be more detached in our trying to apply the instruction. Somehow or another, with diksha, we take it more as an emotional and sentimental. So then we tend to not use our intelligence in trying to follow. Does that make sense? So the point is the that connection is important, but it's the siksha that keeps the connection dynamic, keeps it alive. Does that make sense?
Our siksha is related to siksha instruction. Diksha, what is that related?
Diksha is also basically means, diksha means that you've given initiation for the purpose of seriously accepting instructions. Right? Because otherwise someone gives you instruction, you can take it or not. But if the diksha is there, then formally you have to accept it. Right? So the conditioned soul, being that the beginning stages of devotional service can be quite unsteady, then that recommendation is there that it's to avoid that, then that formalization of that one has to follow the order of the spiritual master. That's why there's the time before initiation, that all these things you want to check and have your doubts and all that, do that before initiation, not start it afterwards. You know what I'm saying? That's the... Right? Does that make sense? Consequently, if one disobeys, because the principle is that the spiritual master, he's representing the Supreme Lord. His ability to preach is coming from the Supreme Lord. And so one may say, no, but unless they're, you know, nitya siddhas, they can't do that. The point is this, the person is riding a bicycle. How is he riding the bicycle? By his own actual ability, his own inherent ability? Or is it the Lord, the potency that the Lord gives that they're able to ride? Right? Because if it was your own inherent ability, that means the first time you see a bike and get on it, you'll ride perfectly. You know? Does that make sense? You know, the guy comes up, sees a bike, says, wow, what's this? Gets on it and then rides off, and then other people go, wow, he could be in the... What was that one? You know, that French cross-country Tour de France? Yeah, Tour de France. So he could be in that, you know, like, wow, you know, it's like that. But it's not. The first time you get on, there's a good chance you fall right off. So you have to be empowered with the ability to ride the bicycle. So according to your karma, you get empowered by different material things. The devotional service is separate from that. So it has nothing to do with the material ability. So it's a matter of the sincerity. Then one is empowered with the spiritual ability. Does that make sense? So therefore, disrespecting guru means disrespecting Krishna. That's why then it's considered a major offense, right? Because that's the discussion, right? Yes.
Is that a line to be empowered by spiritual means like training?
Training means it's association. By associating with the spiritual master and hearing, that's the training. Mm-hmm. And then what you have heard and practiced, right, and understood, and even better, realize that you can help others with.
But it is the same thing for the material.
It's the same for the material. Because the point is the material is only a reflection of the spiritual. Because in the spiritual world, cooking is only something done spiritually for please the Lord. The point is everything, the field is only the facility or the medium, the environment, the instrument, right? It's not the endeavor is actually the desire to please or the desire to gain a result. Does that make sense? Because you're applying it, right? Because if you have facility, there's no interest, nothing happens. You have interest, but no facility, nothing happens. But the point is that it's only when you have the interest can something be done. So the interest is the prominent, while the facility is the secondary. Right? You know, otherwise a person says, well, if I didn't give you the money, you wouldn't be able to do this project. But the point is without that person's interest and inspiration, even you have the money, you still don't have the project. You know what I'm saying? So that's the more important. It's the, you know, the senior of the two. Does that make sense?
As Maharaj described on Tuesday, so it also refers, like, in ISKCON we have the Shiksha Guru of third type, the preachers or person responsible for some projects, so we are also obliged to follow them properly with understanding.
Mm-hmm. But in line with Sadguru.
Yes.
But which is in line with Adiguru.
When they are not in line, we can...
Then you, where they're not in line, you avoid that. You know what I'm saying? Other things may be good, but, you know, it's just like, let's say, they themselves don't have good sadhana, but they're good managers. So they've made a schedule for the temple and how things are going to run and what's going to go. And that's good. And by following that, everybody's engaged and all that. They themselves may not be getting much benefit from it in the way of applying it in their own life. So that you avoid. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's like the person is very good in, let's say, he's chanting of japa or his kirtan or something he does really nice, so you associate on that level. But another aspect of devotional service they may not be very developed in. So that in that part, you don't associate with them. You associate with someone else who's... You know what I'm saying? We have the idea of the perfect person who they are everything and like this and that. That's nice. You know, at least then it creates some respect for authority. But more mature is to be able to understand that someone will be strong in one area but not necessarily have to be good in another area. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the actor is really great on stage, but off stage he's just terrible. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so like that, they're good in their area. But outside of that, they may not be. But that's just the way it is. Is that okay? So you take association.
And also sometimes those positions, like, overlap or change. When, for example, I would be managing the temple with my Guru Maharaj, both as co-managers. So then his instruction regarding the project are...
That's management.
Yes, they are not to be taken as...
No, but the spiritual principle behind it, the quality of the service, the quality of the consciousness, those are superior. But when it comes down to, you know, whether we do this at 5 o'clock or at 5:30, then if you're co-managers, then it's equal. But in etiquette, you'll still deal, you know, respectfully. You know what I'm saying? That's just anyway, because if there's two managers and one's older than the other, been around long, it's something that creates a cause for respect, then that the dealings are respectful, but it doesn't mean that because you're respectful on because from dealings that the decision making is their senior and your junior. No, that's equal. You know what I'm saying? Unless, of course, they have much more experience and all that, then that's another thing. But if they don't, then it's equal. But it just means you have to very nicely tell them that you don't think that that's going to work. Right? Does that make sense? Well, if it's God brother, you might be a little bit more blunt. You know? Does that make sense?
The same consideration takes place when somebody is stepping out from the range of his duties, like GBC is by misunderstanding coming and trying to manage everything as a local manager?
Yeah, so then that's a local manager. And so therefore, if he's dealing with on local management as a local manager, then he's your equal in that area. But if they step back to the standards and all that, then he's your superior. So it's just a matter of how they want to deal. You know what I'm saying? To be able to make those, that be able to distinguish and be able to apply that, then that's what you want to do. But that may take practice. If you can do it immediately, then that's great. But if not, then you practice it. Does that make sense? Yes.
If the scripture masters have different moods.
Different moods.
In society.
Yeah, well, that's why you choose. Just like at lunch, there's different preparations. You eat more of whichever one you like better. Unless it's just all the, you know, paneer out of the sabji, then that may not exactly work. But, you know, or only the pakoras or something. No, that they are the preachers in the area means that they are respected as preachers. But the application of the instruction in your life is going to be through the mood or direction of one's own guru. Does that make sense? So they may be the person there, but still, when it comes to you, that to be able to be mood and all that, you still take it in whoever you're taking it from. And if they have a problem with that, you have to explain it to them. That's just the way it is. Sorry. You know, it's like, but I'm the temple president. And then you just look at him in the eye and say, for how long? You know, the other person is eternally. So if you're going to tell me you're going to be here eternally, then I'll take it seriously. But if it's, you know, you only came here, you know, a year and a half ago, and you're the 10th one in the last 7 years, who says, you know, why do I have to take your mood as the mood? You know, we're talking about going back to Godhead. You're the temple president, means you're the manager here. And so naturally, because you're managing, you're managing a spiritual arrangement. So that means you have the responsibility, so that puts you in the senior position. But the point is one already has that connection with the spiritual master. So the point is management doesn't trump spiritual. Management is to make nice arrangements for spiritual. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the person, just like, let's say you have a kitchen manager and you have the cook. So, which of the two is more important? The cook, right? So, this kitchen manager is only to make the facility for the cook. But much of the time we see the kitchen manager wants to adjust the cook for whatever's easy for his management. You know, it's like he goes to the market and just the first things that he sees, he just buys that and brings it back. And therefore you as the cook have to cook that. Who said? So what? You know what I'm saying? Why is it that's the, you know, of course, if he's the senior man, you're junior and all that, that's another thing. But nowadays, that's not necessarily the position. You know, you have just a temple devotee that's been here since the 80s, and they, you know, came later, but they're a manager, so then they rise up. Because nowadays, before it was, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you're talking about 11 years. You know, so the difference there is you joined in, you know, 75, so someone who joined in 73, they were much senior to you. But nowadays, you know, it's not exactly like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, if you're aspiring for a Diksha Guru and you've established a Shiksha Guru, when it comes to making decisions in Krishna consciousness, would the Shiksha Guru be your first contact or the Diksha?
The point is generally speaking, the Diksha Guru is the prominent Shiksha Guru. That would be the general case. But if not, then one would have to work that out with the Diksha Guru that it is like that. Right. So whoever is the prominent Shiksha Guru, that will be the main mood, and all the others will be in support of that. How the guru is eternal. I mean, the soul is eternal, and the guru is the soul, not the body. So why would they? What aspect of eternal are you?
You know, that to understand. Say now, the disciple does not perfect his life.
Yeah. So the guru comes back.
That's in.
Generally, yeah.
So if you want him to come back, mess around. Yes, that's a little bit more than just you just do whatever you like, you know. It's just like this. You do something wrong and end up, you know, in the principal's office at school. Who has to come down and bail you out? Right? Your parents, right? So that's the way it works.
To become guru, I mean, how intelligent is that?
How
intelligent is that?
How intelligent is that? Depends who you ask. If you ask Bhanu Maharaj, it's not very intelligent. They've been trying for the last 20 years to get him to accept disciples. And I don't know if he has, but it's, I mean, it's, he has. There must be very recent then.
I'm not even sure that somebody knows that he has, but...
Okay. Well, at least if they find out, he might have a lot of... I remember once it was, I think it was Burjan went to Russia. See, in Russia, it's like the eternal connection is established by a smile. You smile, he's your guru forever, like that. So he was told, I think, to be careful of this. So he went the first time. And then someone came to him and said, you know, would you be my spiritual master? And he said, oh, I'm sorry, my wife said this time I can't accept any disciples. And the guy was so bewildered, they just went away. So it worked for that time. Right? Back the second time, then, you know, he had to be more insistent. So he said, no, you know, forget it, you know. Like that, pleading, no. So finally, okay, they gave up. And then, you know, same trip a little bit later, then someone else is harassing him. And then he said, no, and they just kept going. He says, okay, after 40 years, if you're still, you know, fixed and determined, then I'll accept you. Like that. And then the person went away. And then a short time later, the first one came back and says, what's this? You said for me, no, and then you said to that one, after 40 years, you'll accept him as a disciple. This is not fair. The point is it's not a matter of intelligence, it's a matter of what is to be done. Just like for Arjuna, you go on the battlefield, you can get killed. So is that intelligence? Right? Like I can say, here, you can move forward here, there's a group of people there, and you can get your head cut off. Or you can turn around now and walk away and not. So which would be intelligent? You know what I'm saying? So the point is if it is one's duty, then that's just the way it is. Otherwise, if everyone is being intelligent, they'd all do nothing. Right? And then what will get accomplished? What relationships will be established? What taste will be there? You know what I'm saying? Because you can take that on anything. Right? Is it intelligent to drink water? I mean, then after, you know, 20 minutes, you got to go pass urine. So it's like, you know, you breathe in, you have to breathe out. You know, and you got to do that all day. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? So it's just a matter of duty. It's just that's the way it is. Consequently, if one disobeys or disrespects the guru, that is offensive and will block one's progress in bhakti. As in the case of showing proper respect and devotion to the sadhu and to Krishna, similarly, by properly serving the guru and chanting the holy name, one can get quick success. Right? So you have the spiritual master and Krishna. So there's also spiritual master and the holy name, because Krishna and the holy name are non-different. Does that make sense? So he's gone through and established it like this, because Krishna, we will understand, Krishna being non-different from his name, that may be the element of difficulty. Right? Having firm faith in the guru, one can, by the strength of the pure name, attain the goal of prema. right? So that firm faith, because it said that prema is mature faith. So when that faith is there, then that strength of the holy name will give, then one will be able to go through. Yes?
Maharaj, is it considered offensive if one has a qualified Diksha Guru, but at some point of his spiritual life, the devotee is receiving more inspiration or teaching from his Shiksha Guru, still maintaining the relationship with the Diksha Guru, but...
It should be a problem. As long as, I mean, if there comes to be a difference in the approach, that then should be discussed with the spirit, with the Diksha Guru. But if it doesn't, if there's no difference in it doesn't make any difference in your application. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what will be seen, there won't not going to be any difference, then don't worry about it. Like that. Does that make sense? But traditionally, what one gains from the Siksha Gurus are just gains in life that's shared with the Diksha Guru. You know what I'm saying? Because that it also is also then that's the element of Sadhu Sangha. Then that variety of aspects are heard and all that. So then the spiritual master also will get that benefit. Does that make sense? Right? It's not that you're benefiting, it's that those instructions may be, you know, a way of looking at it and all that. That's why association of devotees is so important, because you get, we'll look, because of our conditioning, we'll look at things in one particular way, right? Well, then if we in the association, we see so many other perspectives to look at it, and it broadens our range. So that's the idea.
We've seen in this one sometimes devotees might have many gurus. You have a guru and he pulls away and leaves, and another, and then he takes a reinitiation, or maybe not, maybe just takes a ship, and that one pulls away. And we're saying here that having firm faith in the guru, one by the strength of the name, one can attain the God of prema. But what if you've been through that experience where so many people have fallen away, and it's very difficult to have faith, because you may be thinking, oh, well, what if he falls away too?
Yeah, but what's falling away?
Well, leaving the society depends, because different gurus...
But what's falling away, technically? If we look at it, because what means, not that it's not a correct way of looking at it, but we're looking at the sentimental aspect of it. But actually, what has gone away? Yes, the form, but maybe the particular individual has gone away, but Krishna as the guru has not gone away. Guru is not gone, just like when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would install deities, he wouldn't use the term install, they would use the term manifest. Because his point is the deity is always there, it just, the installation makes it so that we can appreciate that. Right? You know, like, does that make sense? So, the idea is that Krishna comes through the personalities. You know, it's just like, let us say you get on a bus, right? It's a government bus. So if you have faith just in the bus, then if the bus breaks down or something like that, or it only goes up to a particular point and stops, and you have to get off the bus, then you start to doubt buses. But if you have faith in the government, then that bus will go up to here, then you switch to another bus and continue. Or if that bus broke down, there'll be another bus running the same line that you can get on and go and continue. So the idea is that the person has taken you as far as they can. So that's you know, it's just like you're walking down the street, you're trying to get to a destination. If somebody can give you direction up to a particular point, they don't know exactly where it is, but they know it's in that direction. So if you go down a few blocks, then ask again. Like that, it's not that, well, I'll only accept his instructions if he'll walk me all the way there. That's the ideal. The reason that that's recommended is because that's the easiest. You know, it's just that you have one guru and you're going to be with him all the way through. Because it makes it, because one is, it's just easy as far as management goes. Right? It's just practical. But also when you're dealing especially with conditioned nature, it makes it easier because the conditioning tends to make us look at it externally. Does that make sense? You know, because the point is that why is it that only on the one? It means if that was the case, you know, we have two or three gurus and now we've lost faith in gurus. How many boyfriends or girlfriends did someone have before they joined the movement or got married? And somehow or another, the faith still goes on. You know what I'm saying? So that was, I remember one Ayurvedic doctor was talking to some lady about, you know, her condition and all that. And he asked, you know, how many, you know, he's taking the pulse, how many men have you been with? And she said, about 30. And it's like he almost fell off his chair, you know, like that. And that was, you know, that's not uncommon, Malecha, you know, like that, you know. So he was, you know what I'm saying? So the thing is it's just a matter of what we, I mean, we've tried to enjoy in the material world. And we've been doing it unlimited lifetimes since time immemorial. And still we have faith that if I just try it this other way, then I'll be happy. But spiritual life, we just take it up as soon as there's one, a couple of obstacles. Oh, that's it. It doesn't work. So the point is that though sentimentally it is better because body, mind, and words are engaged. So the mind has a big difficulty with this because you have the relationship, the emotions, all those things. It's a problem. But technically, you're still continuing with the same guru. It's just different manifestations. Because ultimately it's Krishna. That's why it said when the devotee, you know, meets Krishna is that you came to me as the spiritual master. You know, so ideally it's, you know, you came to me as the spiritual masters, this whole line of spiritual masters, you know, like that. But, you know, it doesn't sound as good in the prayers. So. Does that make sense? So technically that's the point, you know. Yeah, because we only apply these things when it comes to authority, really. You know, there's been a problem with the temple president, therefore you have to make a committee because a person can't do it. You know, a guru's there, then, you know, we don't have to put so much emphasis on guru. It's just, you know, it's a necessity, you know, just like, you know, breathing or something is. But it's not something we overemphasize or pay much attention to like that. But at the same time as, you know, the person's been married, you know, two or three times, and that's cool, you know, or, you know, it didn't really work out with his kids and they don't really like him and all that, so, but they're having another kid. You know, why isn't he banned from having children? You know what I'm saying? His teenage kid is completely crazy and wild and disturbing the whole community. Why doesn't the community make a ban that this person is unqualified to be a parent? You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't that, I mean, if we're really looking at it from just being just straightforward, logical, practical, wouldn't that be the proper way? You know, the guy blows it with the first marriage, you know, like that, can't be supportive or can't be, you know, the fidelity is not good or, you know, can't make a facility or arrangement. Shouldn't he be banned, and at least until further training and stuff like that, that they can't get married again? Wouldn't that be, it would save something that they say, no, but if the guru falls so much, you know how much trouble it causes when grihastha falls down in a community? Okay, the whole, disrupts the whole community. Like that. So what's the difference? Like that. But on the one side, if it's what we would consider our normal material life, then we'll put up with unlimited, you know, obstacles and all that. But spiritual, no, there can be nothing. And if it's not perfectly clean, it's not good enough for me, you know? Like that.
I guess if one has faith in Krishna's protection, if one has that faith, then Krishna will make sure you don't.
Like that. The point is, do you want to go back to Godhead or not? That's the point. If you do, you'll get there. You know? And the point is that between the spiritual master and Krishna, that's their relationship. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, the point is that the mailman means the mailman's important because through the mailman you get the mail, but if the mailman changes, you still get your mail. The mail is coming from somewhere else. It's someone else's arrangement. It's someone else's potency. You know what I'm saying? We're taking it out of the emotional realm here into the intellectual to get the point across. You know, so we're not addressing the aspect of the relationship and how one feels in losing the relationship. But the point is, as far as validity and ability to go back to Godhead, it doesn't change. You know, it's just more difficult, you know. Generally speaking, if that happens, it's a matter of, in other words, if it doesn't bother you, then you probably have no personal problems in the area. If it does bother you, it may be that we ourselves do that, you know, or have been, you know what I'm saying? And so otherwise, why is it that, why would the person have authority issues because, you know, his parents didn't deal, his teachers didn't deal, the bigger boys around the block, you know, his, you know, football coach, his, all these things, they all dealt in a way he could. But why would that happen? That's karma. So that means he must have been in those positions and dealt like that. You know, otherwise the other guy, it's at home, he can't relate at anything, but when he goes and he's on the team with the captain and the others, then he feels that really at home. These are his real brothers. These are his real, you know, father. Like that. You have those guys also. You know, or the guy is at home, he feels really comfortable. When he goes out, no one else deals properly. So that means in that area they were good, in the other area, that's where they were exploited. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's just life. So not ideal. We'll never say it's ideal. We'll never say it's you know, even good, but it's just you're dealing in the conditioned environment. Is that okay? Yes. It's not a matter of the heart. Generally speaking, from what I understand, is they come back in person. But if not, at least they have to make the arrangements with some other person. Right, because it's the person who's going to, that we're going to notice. Otherwise, generally speaking, what we notice in the heart is our own material desires and needs. That's what's really, you know, how you say it, speaks to us, you could say. You know. Does that make sense? So it's generally in person. Does that sound? But, as Prabhupada points out in that last point where he's making in Pitumar's discussion about the same, but Krishna will protect the spiritual master, so therefore, you know, it works out. Because Krishna is ultimately the guru, and then they come on behalf because of the connection.
What I realized is the importance to be part of this community.
Part of the community, yes.
Because some, especially in the West, we are quite individual.
Well, individual is not a problem. Community means a group of individuals. See, that's the element is that the Vedic concept is people can be very individualistic, but there's some common basis for that sense of friendship or community. You know, it's not that everybody just has to go along and go with the flow. It's not, it means the Vedic concept of community is not lemmings. You know, like that. So it's a matter of what will actually, you know, what actually works. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, how you say, you know, the Germans walk into Belgium, and then, you know, they take up living there and, you know, how you say, fraternizing with the local girls and things like that. No one's saying anything, right? Because if you say something, then, you know, you might be fraternizing with Yamaduta or something, you know. So one is very careful not to say anything. And if the situation came up, one might also be as close or, you know, involved with them, right? Then, and no one says anything. Now, then the Germans leave, you know, when the Allies come, and then all those people that were close with the
with the Germans, then now they shave their head and, you know, kick them out and, you know, do all those kind of things. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of the, it's not, it's the sense of community is you're an individual and you do what's necessary, but within the framework. But the point is the framework defined? You know, that's the point, is the framework defined? So unless it's defined, that's what Manu's for. It defines the framework. Otherwise, how do you know what is proper? You know, does that make sense? You know, say, let us say, then, if you're insulted in a particular situation, you know, that has a personal aspect, then you avoid that situation. You went to someone's house, they insult you. You don't go back to their house. Right? Now, if you're a family person, then all the members of the family, they'll also not associate with that person. Right? Because the family is one entity. Right? So, you know, if I come up and punch you in the arm, then it's not that I can say, well, I didn't punch you in the face, you know, it's, you know, like that, you know, so it's like, your face can talk to me like that. Maybe, okay, you don't shake my hand, you know, like that, but does that make sense? So it goes together, but we may not necessarily follow those things. You know what I'm saying? It's defined there, because in the Western culture, you know, in your more general, it's not a big issue. You know, if there's, you know, a strong family tradition, you know, like then the Montagues and the Capulets, then they're very careful to not interact. You know what I'm saying? Because of this, or the Hatfields and the McCoys, right? They're known for this avoidance. But it's just in those that have that strong sense of community. But if there's no sense of community, then it's not. Does that make sense? So the idea is that the community has a common basis, though everybody is an individual, right? Just like the definition of Gostiyanandi is a group of Bhajanandis that cooperate together to preach. Right? Because we think, well, Bhajanandi is one thing and a Gostiyanandi is another. You know, it's like that. You know, the guy doesn't get into sadhana, this, that, God, because I'm a Gostiyanandi. No. Gostiyanandi is good at his own sadhana, but he's able to create environments to share that opportunity with others. That's what makes him Gostiyanandi, while the Bhajanandi doesn't. Right, so it's an it's the cooperation of individuals that makes the Vedic community so powerful. Does that make sense? You know, that's why the Western thinks, oh, if they're a group, then they're all yes men, because that's what your common Western culture does. The Vedic, it's everyone's in the temple, and everybody's doing something different. Right, if you're in a church, everybody does exactly the same thing at the same time in the same mood. Right? But in the temple, everybody's doing something different. Right? Because the point is it's self-realization. It's the individual's connection with the worshipable entity. Like that. They're doing it as a group, but it's still the individual. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now your question.
Even by that, you emphasize the individual aspect of the living entity.
Mm-hmm.
And in the institution like ISKCON,
mm-hmm.
means there is also the sense of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Means
mm-hmm.
to help each other when we have one guru there for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if we deal with the two aspects at the same time, we can solve many.
Yes, that is the key, because dealing with the individual, see, it means you have the individual, there's the institution, right? So individual will generally take that to be more liberal, right? Institution will take as more conservative. But the actual process is that they're both combined. That's you know, what's called the middle path, or probably referred to as the razor's edge, because some people feel that the term middle path is an exclusive copyright of the, you know, I think the Mahayana Buddhism or something, you know.
Is it Mahayana or is it Theravada? I don't know. Huh? One of the Buddhists. Like that. So, does that make sense? But that's the point, is that the institution is created so that the maximum number of individuals can take advantage. You know what I'm saying? Because somebody doesn't, let's say, have facility to go out on Harinam on their own. If the temple organizes it, then everybody can make it. They don't have to get together madangas, kartals, this, that, or try to contact. All they have to do is show up. Right? So that's the point of the institution. The institution creates facility like that. Leadership inspires you to be involved in it. Right? In other words, management creates the facility. Leadership inspires you to take part. And does that make sense? Management doesn't inspire you to take part. It may for a couple of years, but generally after a few years, then it doesn't work anymore. Because, you know, how many times can the temple president tell you, Krishna says, just surrender unto me, like that. So, does that make sense? Should the acceptance of Shiksha Guru be formal? Not necessarily. The point of the relationship with the Shiksha Guru is alive because you're following the instructions, right? You're hearing, following instructions. That's what makes it alive. Then you have the connection. The Diksha Guru, then it must be formal. You know what I'm saying? So someone could be a Shiksha Guru, though you haven't even met them or they don't even know who you are. It'll still work. Like that. Then if you introduce yourself and all that, then, nice. You feel more connected. But it's the following of the instructions that makes it dynamic. Is that okay? So, because otherwise, if you ritualize it, then it's the same as Diksha. Like that. I've been asked so many times, what's the formal ceremony for accepting a Shiksha Guru, right? So there isn't one, like that. It's just that you interact. Like, does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you have a kid, and they're, they're in the family, so their mother's there. But, it's kind of a close community, so there's another two or three ladies in the community that have a natural affection, so the interaction is like mother. Right? And everybody accepts it like that. Even the biological mother accepts that, her sister or, this other person is, just as much a mother as they are. Because, so many situations they're taking care when the mother can't, or, the mother has to be at work for something and so they take care, something. Does that make sense? Okay. What's the formal ceremony for accepting that other person as mother? You understand? That's the answer to your question. Is that okay? So Shiksha, it's only because they are acting as one and you're reciprocating. So they're giving instructions, you're taking them and following. Then it's a lie. If they stop interacting with as mother, are they mother? No. But is your biological mother still your mother even if you haven't seen her for 20 years? Right? So the Diksha Guru will always be the Diksha Guru. And he'll always be the primary Shiksha Guru. But Shiksha Gurus are Shiksha Gurus because you follow the instructions. You don't have that Shiksha relationship. That's what I was saying. The preachers and the local authorities, they're Shiksha Gurus because they're there, you're hearing from them, you're following the instruction. But then when they, go to another temple or that, you're not following, so there's no Shiksha relationship. Does that make sense? But there may be if that they gave so many nice instructions, so even years after they've gone, you're still doing what they told you to do, so you have a Shiksha relationship. Does that make sense? Yes.
You mentioned about how management creates facility and leadership creates inspiration. My question was, how does that one deal with a situation where it seems like leadership was the inspiration and spiritual leadership has been taken over by the management psychology.
Yeah, well, that's why it's then just suggest to them that possibly in the kitchen instead of cooks, you know, why not the guy that just, you know, manages the kitchen and all that, let him do the cooking. And if they say that's stupid, then the other point's stupid also. Leadership's one thing, management's another. A leader may be a manager or not be a manager. That's not essential. A manager has to be a manager, otherwise they're not a manager. But if you take it a step further, what's even more annoying is where leadership is replaced by management and those who claim to be managers aren't managers. That's when you really, really have a problem. So neither do you have inspiration or facility like that. Again, we'll leave you to connect the dots. So. When should a guru be rejected? Oh, okay, so now we get around to it. I was waiting for It may happen that through asatsanga, a guru may lose his qualifications. Starting as a big guru by committing namaparad, he loses his knowledge. By offending other Vaishnavas, he loses the taste for the name and gradually falls under the control of wealth and women. Such a guru should be rejected. By the mercy of Krishna, that disciple attain a new bona fide guru and take up pure chanting of the name again. So it's by the mercy of Krishna that one gets another one. So the point is the spiritual aspect is that by Krishna's grace you've gotten a bona fide guru, and by Krishna's grace you'll get another one. And maya is that we didn't take up spiritual life for unlimited lifetimes, and that the spiritual master decided to retake up spiritual life. I mean material life. Does that make sense? So that's the maya aspect. So the focus is on... Does that make sense? Okay. So here it's being pointed out that it happens, right? So Lord Brahma is speaking here, so that's, it's not a new thing. It's been going on for a long time. Like that. Also, what's his name mentions? Can't remember. One of the Chakrabartis. Krishna Bhajanamrita. He says that this point of gurus needing to be rejected and accepting new ones has been going on, he's saying, since the time of Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya was performing his pastimes with his associates, there was still a need at that time. Like that. So it's always been there, but it's not something you talk about. You know, just like, let us say you meet your, you know, some friend and all that, you know, but you ran out of tissues because the kid, you know, was doing something and the toilet plugged up and flooded the hole upstairs. And, you know, does that make sense? And so therefore you were late for the appointment, and so therefore you didn't get that big case that you were expecting to get, that didn't come through, and because of that, then you were going to have to put off, you have to work extra hours, so now you're going to have to put off the vacation and all these things. And so when you meet your good friend and who's very close, is this all the things you talk about? Not necessarily. But they're major elements in your life, but that's not the basis of discussion, you know, unless, of course, that was how you became friends, you know. You know what I'm saying? But if you're at a ski club, you don't talk about, you know, that not only did the toilet overflow, but the plunger thing was broken. You know, and you had to go out and get another plunger, but by the time you got bagged, then the hole upstairs was flooded, and like that, and, you know. Does that make sense? Okay. Does that make sense? So the Shastra mentions it, but it's not something it constantly talks about. Because that's not the important aspect. By the mercy of Krishna, you get again. That's the important. So Krishna's mercy, the importance of guru, that's again and again and again discussed. Yes?
Except you take up chanting of the name again. What's the gift?
Just
the name.
Oh. Means continue on the path like that, you know.
In accordance with what you said,
It never stops. But the point is that one will be distracted by that. So probably it means that one will be distracted by that, so one will be putting attention and energy into that. So then one again, in a happy mood, takes it up again. Just like, let's say you're in a really good mood and you're cooking lunch, okay? And then you have a couple of weeks where things aren't going nice at all. You know, things that are happening in the family or the community or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So you're cooking every day, but do you notice it? It's just something you do. Then after 2 weeks, everything works out. You're really happy. Then you go into the kitchen and you're cooking and then you really have a good time. Okay? So in your mind, you know, now we're cooking. You know, it's happening. But it never stopped. But it's just because the focus was on other things that may not be as noticed. Like that. In other words, if you understand that the spiritual is the Lord who's spiritual master and it's the instruction, so both of those are in place, then you haven't actually lost your spiritual master. You're just not in connection with that manifestation. You understand? So then by Krishna's grace, another comes. So not, but if you feel that something's lost there, then when the spiritual master is then manifest again, then you'll feel that gain, so therefore it becomes dynamic. Is that okay? No need of reinitiation, but there's a need of finding someone who you'll accept on the level of siksha as like the Diksha Guru. Does that make sense? So in other words, the conditioned soul tends to be a little lazy, right? So then if there's someone's responsible, then you could say that then you're going to follow nicely, right? Someone's responsible. Does that make sense? So the point is, and you only make advancement by the association of advanced devotees. So the point is if the association of one is lost, then you find someone else. So it's the more important is the association and the instructions. Because that's what's lost. The connection to Guru technically is not lost. The Diksha is a commitment, but that commitment is still there. You have the person is what inspires because we're people. But the point is it's a principle also. You know what I'm saying? Because we're looking at the personal, possibly from the element of our conditioned nature, not necessarily from the position of the soul. Because the position of the soul, then it's that relationship with Krishna. And does that make sense? And so then, that interaction with the spiritual master is based on the relationship with Krishna. Though you also have a relationship with that particular soul. But as long as they're in that capacity, if they give up that capacity, you don't have that relationship. You know what I'm saying? You know, you go, is that makes sense? So it's a necessary office. So if the person filling the, I mean, someone has to be in that office, but if that person is not functioning in that capacity, someone else will be put into that office. So the duties of the office continue, and the effects of working with that office will continue. Is that?
This proposition of after such situation, following like taking shelter simply of Prabhupada without actually subduing oneself to some living Shiksha Guru is not a very strong position, or is
it's it not a strong position? No, because first of all, it's a misnomer that there was a time once you took shelter of the spiritual master that you weren't taking shelter of Prabhupada. You know, that's already the first mistake. You know, because the point is why they say you go back to taking shelter of Prabhupada, or again take shelter, since when was it not there? You know, it's just like you go up to a Ramanuja, someone in the Ramanuja Sampradaya and tell them to again take shelter of Ramanuja. What are you talking about? You know? You know, if you go up to someone in a Ramanuja line and ask them, who do they follow, who are they going to say? They're going to say Ramanujacharya. If you ask them, who is their guru, then they'll say, you know, like this, and mention the name of their guru. So we are followers of Prabhupada. But we have our specific guru that we're that makes our connection. Does that make sense? So the culture of Krishna, that's why Prabhupada mentioned, the culture is important. It's a cultural revolution. We're going to impress upon the people of the world through culture. But somehow or another we think it's through management. It's not. It's culture. Management is simply how you organize things to see that the particular emotional effect is obtained. That's all it's for. You know what I'm saying? But we miss the point. We think if we managed it, we got the facility, got the money, everything's done. But unless you do something with that facility and the money, you don't have anything. Right? And I'm just talking niti. I'm not even talking the experience and all that. It's on dharma and higher levels. Niti is that if you have money and you hoard it and you never use it, then it's as good as not having the money at all. Like, the point came up because the boys were discussing. The point is made that when you find treasure in the forest, let's say you go and you find, you know, some treasure sitting in the forest, some valuable, you know, some pirates have left a box of gold and gems and, you know, golden goblets, right? Always has to be a goblet in there, right? You know, some coins, right, with some, you know, old faces on them and stuff like that, okay? Right? So, we'll accept that as treasure, right? Okay. So, unless you're Sanatana Goswami, then you say, then retreat to here, right? And so, like that. So you can't claim you have treasure until you pick it up and walk off with it. Right? Until you do something with it, interact with it, you can't say it's yours. Right? So in the same way, just because it's sitting there, unless you're interacting with it, it's not technically yours. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is you come with nothing, you'll go with nothing. So technically nothing's ever yours. So you have that sense with whatever you're interacting with. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. That answers the question.
But is it workable for some already trained and advanced devotees, maybe direct disciples of Prabhupada after?
But the point is they don't have God brothers, they don't have benefit from, you know, they also don't hear classes and stuff like that. It just made me, they are more, means there's one place King Prabhupada says leader means one who is inspired, consistently inspired, and is able to inspire others. That's the definition of a leader. Manager is one who can manipulate the material energy, you know, in a, how you'd say, consistent and a logical sequence of events that gets a result that was, a physical result that's expected. Right? But it doesn't mean that anybody is being inspired. Right? You could say he's inspired, therefore he's managing nicely. But it doesn't mean anybody else is. Therefore he's not a leader. He's a manager. Right? Does that make sense? Just like the person who organizes the kitchen is not necessarily a cook. Right? All they have to do is see the accounts are that, the orders are being given, the people are in the kitchen, you know, the pots and pans are there, the gas is there, the water connection is there, all the boga is there. You know, everything's on time. That's all they have to do. They just only have to be a manager. They don't have to know anything about cooking at all. If they did, it'd make it even better. You understand? So that's the thing, is that there's a difference between the two. If they're the same, great. You know. But if they're not, it doesn't matter. You know. Generally, those who Prabhupada personally trained were both.
But it's not necessarily that one has to be. You know, like Satsarupa Maharaj, he wasn't a great manager, but he had one of the nicest zones, you know, as far as pleasantness. Because he was a good leader. And so those who are managers, they'll manage. Does that make sense? But the other ones, they're leaders and managers, so then they'll, you know, personally get involved with the managers and directing them and training them. Well, the other, they're doing a good job as long as it's Krishna conscious, that's all that matters. Does that make sense? The guru takes unsuitable people for disciples. He will have to suffer for that. And if a disciple takes an unqualified guru, he will accordingly suffer. In order to avoid these misfortunes, one should be cautious. On the other hand, as long as both guru and disciple are properly qualified, the relationship will continue. Right? So qualified means by training and practice. So the point is this training and practice should be given. Then one knows what one's doing. Otherwise, it's just the sentiment, you know, which is, if everything's perfectly connected, it works. But if at any time something doesn't go right, then unless you have training, how do you get through? Right? The child, something goes wrong, they have a problem. The adult then knows how to get through that. Right? So that's the point, because they have training, they have experience. So, ideally, this relationship is eternal. But if the disciple becomes bad, the guru must reject him. And if the guru becomes bad, the disciple must reject him. Otherwise, both may fall. Better one than both. Right? So we're just being practical here. This is meaning of just being practical. Right? Like that. So he's saying, ideally, it should be eternal. Because you work on that basis. Because the soul's eternal, the instructions of the Lord is eternal, the practice is eternal. So it's functioning on the eternal platform. Now, if by time-wise it doesn't last, technically, the interactive relationship eternally, it still doesn't take the whole thing off the eternal platform. Does that make sense? We always have to be able to distinguish. That's the point, is that by discussing these things, one is able to tell the difference. Otherwise, by sentiment, the mind will just lump everything together by feelings. Right? So the intelligence will look for the common point. And then, you know, my father had problem, my guru has problem, so therefore all authority has problem. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the same. The father didn't necessarily have a spiritual problem. You know what I'm saying? So it means there is a difference. Right? So you could also see the difference. Does that make sense? You mean biological father, you're not going to get another one. But you can find another person who will act as a father, you know, and guide you in your life, even though your father doesn't do it. So in the same way as the spiritual master, if something goes wrong, you can find another person who will. So therefore, on both counts, There's hope. So there's no need to become cynical. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, in what situation the guru may abandon the disciple?
If he's just not interested at all. It's one thing if they can't follow the instructions, it's another they don't want to. You know what I'm saying? So, if it's just that they've fallen down and know it's not ideal, but, you know, they're in that state, then that's technically still what Krishna's talking about. They're still sadhus. Right? Because they still have that knowledge, but they're not able to apply it. They're not able to act on it. But when it's like, you know, it's fine, what's the problem, you know? Like that. Then at that point, one could consider, you know? It's not a means of just he's overwhelmed by the mode, so he may say a few things. But I mean, this is a means of an actual commitment to it.
So it would take some time to be able to establish it. Yes. Yeah, then it continues. Sorry? What if the guru comes back? That's why we personally always recommended that you don't bother with this other element. It means you don't worry about reinitiation. What if they do? You know. And, you know, I mean, so many others have, why can't they? You know, they're not an exclusive club, is that they can't come back to Krishna consciousness. So that's there. But if one has, then it just means that they would then, I mean, it depends upon the situation. You have interaction, their vision, their ability is, you know, comparable to before, then they would be a Siksha Guru. You know, and if not, then they're just somebody who helped, you know, they're a friend or an acquaintance or like that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yes. The eternal. The eternity.
Would it mean that if the guru is bona fide, does not fall down, this relationship with this particular individual soul will continue in the spiritual world?
Yes.
If you guide him?
Yes. But if not, then, in other words, at the last point, that's what's going to be there. In order to prevent the pain of having to reject one's guru, so now we're getting to the emotional, right? Now we've dealt with the intellectual aspect of it. That this is just the facts, the way it works. This is the method. Now the emotional element. One should first carefully examine him to see if he is a pure devotee of Krishna. Even in receiving a material article, one examines it for quality. Once having accepted a qualified guru, if one disobeys his instructions, one commits a grave offense. By that, even the demigods can fall down to hell. So that's the end of that. Okay, so that makes sense. So, in other words, this is the point is if you understand what's going on a qualified, the guru understands and is qualified, then the relationship would work. So better, you know, ideally one person, there's one relationship and that continues on through. But if not, then Krishna will send someone else, if you're sincere like that.
In probably full version, it's mentioned that a guru, when his disciples comes back, should reject him by telling to the assembly of sadhus that I accepted this person, but I reject him and it's not qualified.
Well, because it means then the connection is not there. Because until one says that or something, then basically there is that idea that, you know, there's some hope or something.
So how far this should be followed in our society?
Meaning?
We don't hear much about such an assembly.
Oh, so it's like,
official,
you know,
rejections.
Okay, you know, so I say... yeah, so the scores for this morning, then, you know, Bhakta Jose did, you know, 100 big books, and Bhaktin, you know, Antoinette, she did, you know, this many, this like that. Breakfast will be a little late today because of this thing like that, and this guru rejects this disciple officially. Bunch of kalpa kribris chakri. Right?
I guess the list would be longer.
I mean, the book scores and the other announcements.
This guru rejects this.
Prabhu, it's time for breakfast. No, but I still have another 3 pages. But once Prabhupada was talking with some devotee, he said something about, you know, devotees leaving Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, very few have left. He said, Prabhupada, no, you know, hundreds, thousands have left. He says, no. Only a few have started eating meat.
So it appears that as long as they didn't go to that point, then. So it just depends. Point is what you can handle. What it's saying is that if the disciple is unqualified, then that has a problem for the guru. Right? So the point is the guru is able to deal with it, then he may try for longer. But if he's not, then he may deal with it on a shorter cycle. Right? Of course, then you're also officially announcing that you're not as powerful as someone else. Like that. So you might also have that, you know, element of social status that might be there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So generally speaking, you see most everybody comes back at some point, you know, like that. It may take them 10 years. But, I mean, at least that's what I've seen in the Western world, 10 years, probably because my, I'm, you know, the, how you say the. The Eastern Bloc, how, you know what I'm saying? Because the West is kind of like, you weren't convinced about sense gratification before, but that was like your birthright. So that you engaged in it, saw it didn't work, took up Krishna consciousness, and then everything became very nice, so you completely forgot about the pain of the material world. So when the idea comes up again, it looks new and fresh, so then you take it up. You know, and so the intensity in which you involve yourself then is you know, like before, or, you know, similar or something. But, you know, when one, you know, very soon comes to the understanding that it is not, it is still not of any more value now than it was 10 years ago. Right?
Reminiscence.
Yes. But if someone who, they're convinced that in our culture there's not much happening, but in the Western culture now that's something happening, then it will take them a lot longer to figure out that it doesn't work, because they'll try this and that. Okay, McDonald's didn't work. Okay, so then we'll try, what's the other one?
Pizza Hut
or, you know, or that, what's that other? KFC, yeah, like that. And, you know, so you know, like that, you know, just keep trying like that, but, you know, because there's that face, so it might take a little longer. So you just have to see what's the natural cycle. But I've generally seen for the Western, it's 10 years. If they're really out there, 10 years is like a general maximum. You know, most, you know, circle back much quicker. Yes?
And did Madhavendra Puri reject Ramchandra Puri at the last stage?
Did Madhavendra Puri reject Ramachandra Puri? I'm not sure if he rejected, but he was making the point that he felt he must be extremely sinful, that at the time of death he has to look at someone and associate with someone like Ramachandra Puri. So whether that would be categorized as rejection or not, but it would definitely very directly and strongly express his displeasure at his disciple's performance. Does that make sense? So Ramachandra Puri should have caught something from that, but it appears he didn't, because then he was by that continuance able to personally and directly insult the Supreme Lord himself. You know, so, you know, he did definitely advance well on that line. Because you also have an element that's not brought out here, then there's Krishna. So if you don't deal with Guru properly, then Krishna will make some arrangement. Like that. Means for you to go away. Like that. Okay. So in other words, there should be training in what's Guru and what's proper. Not a sentimental understanding, but, you know, an actual, you know, proper knowledge. And then understand the relationship and the mood, because the, you know, feelings are involved. So one should understand both. Okay. 4. Criticism of scripture.
Scripture means the four Vedas, the Upanishads, and the Puranas. Having emanated from the breathing of Krishna, they constitute perfect knowledge and authority. Particularly in spiritual matters, these must be referred to as the final proof. Right? Because we may give proof other than that. You give examples and all these other things, but the final proof has to be Scripture. Because the material senses of a man, characterized by the four faults of Karana Patava, limited perception, Brahma, illusion, Vipralipsa, desire to report something other than what is perceived, and that's a popular one, and Pramada, inattention of the senses. Well, actually, you would have to say all four are very popular, but you would say that the Vipralipsa is actually a cultural basis of interaction. Conscious, right? They're all have the same kind of illusion, the same limited perception, and the same inattention of the senses. Therefore, they're called a community. But it's their specific desire to report something other than what is perceived that it really creates the bonding. Right? Yeah. It really gives the foundation. That's interesting, no? Okay. So, they cannot possibly perceive anything beyond the material level of unconscious matter. The spiritual realm would be unapproachable without the aid of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna has given the four Vedas, which are beyond the four faults of the senses. And by these alone can man progress towards the ultimate goal. Right, so, because man is imperfect because of his imperfect senses, his material desire, therefore he can't approach the Supreme, because the Supreme is beyond. We say transcendental. How does something not transcendental approach transcendental? It's not possible. Like that. So it's a matter of, by Krishna's grace, one can approach. So that first aspect is the Shastra's given. Right? And then we see that the Guru is then the one who represents that Shastra. Right? We can know the Shastra through the Guru. Right? So through the Shastra we can know Krishna. Through Guru we can know the Shastra. Therefore, through Guru we can know Krishna. Does that make sense? What are the contents of the scriptures? The wise man will understand that karma and jnana are secondary and worthless as independent processes, and that the path of bhakti is the essence. The Vedas stand as the authoritative guide and reference, pramana, and they prove nine different topics, which may be classified into sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. Right. So here again, like that, then Brahma is establishing that you have all these different points, but they're always established back into sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. If you have something that you would call a complete body of knowledge, if it doesn't have all three, it's not complete. Even though there may be very less on avideya and prayojana or on another, but it has to have all of them. Otherwise, it won't be complete. And that means then it'll only actually be proper, have all of them, if it's connected to the Lord. Otherwise, with our imperfect senses, we'll miss something. Right? Turn it into a bunch of hats or something. Right? That kind of thing. Right. By these 10 principles, the Vedic authority and the 9 topics which the Vedas prove, ignorance is destroyed and transcendental knowledge is revealed. So in other words, there are 9 topics, and that's based on, it's proven by Shastra. So Praman is the first, and then you have, is Praman, and then you have 9 Prameyas. Those things which are proven, right? Shastra proves it, and then there are the 9 topics which are proven. Does that make sense?
So Bhaktivinoda stated the Shamula from here.
Yes. Because Haridas Thakur says, I will speak what you make me speak. So therefore, this knowledge has come from Lord Chaitanya. Does that make sense? Because Rupa and Sanatan,
Are they considered disciples of Lord Chaitanya? Right? Yeah, they're direct disciples. Right? Does that make sense? So they're seen in a junior position. So Lord Chaitanya speaks to them. And then they take that knowledge, compile it so that we can appreciate it, and then disseminate that through the line. Right? Haridas Thakur, how did Lord Chaitanya see him?
Equal
or even senior? He's the Namacharya. Right? Lord Chaitanya's came to give the chanting of the holy name, but Haridas is the Namacharya. Right? Because he's coming also in that line, even though he's God, of course, but that's the fun. Balaram, who's first, Krishna or Balaram? Who's senior? Yeah, so for Krishna, that's fun. Okay, so here it is, the Haridas Thakur. So now the same knowledge is going to be presented, but rather than Lord Chaitanya speaking to Haridas Thakur, Haridas Thakur, on the direct by the inspiration of Lord Chaitanya, speaks this to Lord Chaitanya. Does that make sense? So therefore, one can say that these nine principles have come, these ten, the Dasamul has come from Lord Chaitanya, because that's what Haridas Thakur says at the beginning of the work. It's there, but as we see, is when it was talking about the Veda before, then it was talking about how the Veda is was one, and simply by hearing it once, one understood it, and one was able to understand the purport and be able to apply it. So then that means people could understand these 10 points. But when it's not, then it has to be pointed out, right? And in here is that because we're looking at karma and jnana are useless, so only bhakti is there. So the 10 points that define bhakti, then that's the actual subject matter. All other things are supportive. Does that make sense? So they may have their detail. Ayurveda may have its detail of its main points and other things, but the actual main points of the scriptures are these 10. Because they're saying the connection to the Lord. So that means those are the things, right? Is that okay? The 9 principles may be summarized as follows. 1, there is one Supreme Lord, Vishnu. Right? The Lord is possessor of all energies. So that means all the energies are His, so all these different branches of knowledge, all the aparavidya connects back to Krishna at this point. Right? Krishna is the fountainhead of all rasas and is situated in His dham where He eternally gives joy to the jivas. Right? So He is the source of all rasas. So the energies are there. What we gain from those energies is still coming from Krishna. Energies are from Krishna. What we experience is coming from Krishna. Right? So still, all the things go back. Why we want to be involved with the activities and the different directions on how to deal with those activities. Those still all go back to the Lord, right? Does that make sense? So even if we're saying how to see all the scriptures in connection with the Dasamul, this brings them in line, right? And then one can take within that, okay, what's the Sambandha, what's the Abhideya, what's the Prayojana, right? Sambandha, what's the connection with the Lord, what's your connection, what's the material energy, right? Because those three are there. So in other words, there's a field here. This field, then it can do something. Right, so most people just look at that. But if you're going to be successful, what's my involvement in it? And if we're talking about the spiritual platform, because karma and jnana are useless, so it must be devotional. Therefore, what's the Lord's involvement in it? Right, because when I engage the field in Abhideya, I will get a result, prayojana. Who's the result for? If it's for me, it's mundane, so that's already been kicked out. Right, because then it has to be karma and jnana. But if it's not for me, it's for the Lord, then that means that it's devotional. So I have to know the relationship of the Lord in Sambandha and Prayojana. And I have to know the field and how to deal with it in Abhideya. That it gets you means it establishes based on what's there in my relationship with the Lord, the field's relationship with the Lord, and my relationship with the field. But the result then is how my relationship with the Lord and that result's relationship is with the Lord. Does that make sense? And of course, my relationship with the result. Does that make sense? But the Abhideya won't change. Right? The mechanics of Abhideya doesn't change. The attitude does. Right? So the whole idea of the Abhideya Shastras is how to keep the devotional mentality when you're applying the technicalities. Sambandha is the technicality. Abhideya is the mentality that to be applied when one is applying the technicality. Right? I think that question came up on Tuesday. The difference between Sambandha and Abhideya in Guru. No? Someone asked?
It was
Monday. You remember the time? just. Some people's minds are like that. Means their memories are like that. You know, they can remember 20 years ago, you know, what happened, and, you know, where it was, what day of the week, what time it was, you know, who did what, who was wearing what they said. So that's all Krishna now, right? So Pramana is Shastra. Now these first three define Krishna. Then four, the jivas are particles of the Lord, unlimited in number, infinitesimal in size, but conscious. unlimited in number, infinitesimal in size, and but conscious. Five, some jivas are eternally bound in the material universes, being attracted by illusory pleasure. Six, some jivas are eternally liberated and engaged in worshipping Krishna. They reside with him as associates in the spiritual sky and experience prema. Right, so that brings it back to, so the point is, four, the jivas are particles of the Lord. Right, that's part of two. The Lord is possessor of all energies. Right, then some jivas are eternally bound in the material universe as being attracted by illusory pleasure. Right, so that is his energy, but then is perverted. Three is perverted. Right, then six here. Is prema, that's three where they're interacting with the Lord based on love. Does that make sense? So it's a direct relationship. While the others, you're only indirectly related to the Lord, or interacting with the Lord through his energies. Right? So it's not satisfactory. Does that make sense? So that's why the apara, not seen in connection, or just, you know, slightly seen in connection with the Lord, or like that, isn't as satisfying. But the person who's on the platform, Atmanivedanam, he's not actually involved with the apara vidya, technically. He's dealing with transcendental knowledge, because for him, there's no aropya, right? It's not that he's applying his desires on this situation, right? The situation is there, it's Krishna, it's his energies, it's supposed to be involved interacting with him, but we have a desire, we apply our desire over that, overlay that on the situation, therefore it becomes mixed, right? So there's no mix there. So it's just knowledge on how to transcend, how to apply oneself to serve Krishna. That makes sense? So it's no longer even apara vidya.
Aropya means?
Aropya. It was given before, the exact term, but aropya means where you connect things in devotional service according to your own desires. You have material desire, you overlay that on the spiritual situation and take from it what you're looking for materially, but at the same time engage in the spiritual. So it means mixed devotional service. Right? It means another, you know, your karma misra, jnana misra bhakti, that is the specifics of how where it's applied in karma or jnana. And then the mechanics. Aropya is the mentality that causes the karma misra, jnana misra bhakti. Does that make sense? You know, so one is the means it's fruitive, but the point is it's but fruit. But then we'll look at well, that only means fruitive, but it can also mean jnana, because jnana is also a desire. So when there's desire to control or enjoy, then that connect the overlaying that onto the devotional opportunity, that's aropya. Then if it's done in the area of activity and fruitive result, we call it karma misra. Right, if it's done in a you know dynamic way, then karma yoga, right? Or if it's done in the area of knowledge or liberation, then it's jnana misra. Or if it's dynamic, then it's jnana yoga. Does that make sense? So in other words, when the aropya is more prominent, then you call it the devotional service is mixed. If it's less prominent, it doesn't mean by volume, but by consciousness, then we'll call it yoga. Is that okay, so then those four establish the jivas. Okay? Then seven, Krishna exists with his energies, the material energy, jiva energy, and spiritual energy, in a state of simultaneous identity and differentiation, permeating all, yet remaining aloof, which is only possible by his inconceivable power, achintya abheda veda tattva. Right, so that's the potency by which he does this. Right? So he has unlimited, so he's the possessor of all energy. So now we've applied the possessor of all energy, so everything that we're dealing with, we're energy, the material energy is energy, the spiritual nature is energy. So he's simultaneously non-different and different. So this explains the relationship with the Lord, and it also puts what, you know, the material energy is thrown in. Right? So when he's possessor of all energies, it means jiva, you know, the material, external and internal. Right? So then, you know, it's unlimited, but those three are your fundamental. Right? So then here is then the relationship, because in Sambandhagyan, so these first seven comprise Sambandhagyan. Right? Okay, then eight, the process specifically mentioned, Abhideya for the jiva in the Vedas is the ninefold process of devotional service, divided into Vaidhi and Raganuga, or Rag-Bhakti. Of the nine processes, the hearing and chanting of the holy name are principal means. That is the reason the chanting of Om is glorified in the Vedas. Right, so the Abhideya is the nine processes. That may be done according to that your inspiration is the rules, or the inspiration is actually that attraction to Krishna. But the process is the same, right? And of these processes, then the hearing and chanting is the primary, right? That's the most principal, you know. That therefore, Omkara is, because that's the chanting of the holy name. It's not as sweet a name as the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's considered the topmost, right? But it's still. A, U, and M means the Lord, the internal potency, and the living entities. There's also the Chandra and the Bindu. Those also have meanings, but I'm not exactly sure. I think one means the interaction and like that. So it's just like in the... So this is Abhideya. So 1 through 7 is Sambandha, 8 is Abhideya, and then 9 is Prayojana. The final goal, a constitutional platform, Prayojana, of the jivas, is the activity of pure bhakti, prema. This is attained by the mercy of Krishna. Right? These are the basic principles for the guidance of the jivas, which are denoted by the Vedas. If one criticizes the Vedas, that is an offense to the holy name. Such a person is a low rascal. In the history of India, there are six personalities who invented theories. And by their inventions, they simply brought themselves to no good end. Jaimini, though claiming to follow the Vedas, does not recognize the Supreme Lord and recommends karmakanda activity independent of worshipping God. Because his point is, he doesn't recognize the Supreme Lord. He doesn't say he says he's not there. He just doesn't recognize. Because his point is this, I do the work, then I get the result. So what does God have to do with it? If I do good work, then I have to get good result. Right? He's not looking at it that God's a person and he's decided whether he wants to give the result or not. Right? So that kind of element is left out. He's just looking at it mechanically. Right? So, you know, by concoction, Kapila thinks that the Lord is imperfect and recommends the process of yoga without understanding its goal. Right? So there's imperfections here, otherwise why are we bound? So therefore, why worry about God? He may have created it and all that, and created all the elements, so they base their process of elevation on the very strict science of analyzing the elements of the universe and how the creation functions. But somehow or another, the person who did that is not worthy of interest. Right? Yes.
Is that referring to the atheistic
people? Yes, because the Bhagavatam is mentioning the son of Devahuti. Because generally here it'll mention Kapila, the son of Devahuti, to make it clear. Because here he's saying six persons who invented theories, right? So son of Devahuti is not inventing. He's only pointing out what's actually there. That's the same. It's just the analytical form of the Bhagavad process, right? In other words, that Krishna is there and we're his servant and he's so attractive and we should serve. Like that, that's dealing with there, but how to get out, and but we're distracted by the material energy, so how that illusion functions. That's what the Shankhya can give you. It can tell you exactly where it is. You'll just say, well, I feel like it. Why are you doing that? Because it makes me happy. But why would it make you happy? Because it doesn't make someone else happy. So what's causing you that you're happy and the next person's not happy? So that's the modes of nature. You know, so like this, then they're able to analyze, you know, what things that, you know, this sense is connected with this, therefore you consider that that's happiness. But someone else doesn't, and after some time you get pain from it, so you don't consider it happiness either.
Maharaj, can it be said that the Buddhists are following Sankhya philosophy?
Not really. Because they don't accept the, you know, there may be aspects of Sankhya in them. Because everything you analyze, that the housewife goes to the supermarket and is analyzing whether the bigger bottle is actually a bargain or it's a trick. Right? When I was a kid, the bigger bottle was always cheaper than the smaller one. But because people are so conditioned that the bigger one's automatically cheaper, unscrupulous manufacturers put a higher price on the bigger bottle and you actually pay more per volume, because people, no one checks. So if you go and check, that would be analyzation. So would that be Shankhya? So why would the Buddhism be? You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's the elements of, but the point is how prominent is it? They also chant the holy name, you know, or what they call the holy name. You know, like that. They also follow the Guru. They follow their own scriptures. They have sadhana. They worship deities. So where's all the authority that comes? But it's not based on the Vedas, therefore it's atheistic. But the principles, if you understand those principles in the Veda, therefore you can discuss with the Buddhist his philosophy. Because you know the origin. So if you know the six systems, then you'll be able to discuss with followers of those systems what they're dealing with, even though you don't have to, it's not necessarily, has its root directly there. You know what I'm saying? Because there's basic principles that are always there. All six will say that the soul has come from matter. Right? Does that make sense? So if you ask, you know, somebody, the religionist, what's the soul? And they say the body, or they say the mind, then you know that, you know, then you're dealing with a part of the six systems here. They don't know it's six systems, but, and they'll only quote a very small part of it. Right? But that's what they're talking. Right? So if they're going to, you know, dissolve their existence, then you know that they're on the Gyan side. And if they're going to attain heaven and be having and so much material pleasures, they're on the karma side. You know, so I'm saying there's very specific things. They follow typical patterns. Is that so? Yes.
Those six personalities usually refers to the disciples of Vyasadeva.
Yes.
Charvaka, Gautama, and etc.
But it's not necessarily the main ones. Because Charvaka is also... You see, Charvaka and the Buddhists are mentioned as outside. You know, they're all... Charvaka's not one of the six. He's just taking advantage of Jaimini. Jaimini is you have to be pious, but Charvak's thing is sense enjoyment's a thing anyway, and you only live this one life. So that because Jaimini accepts, you know, the reincarnation, but Charvak doesn't. So the point is since you only have this life, why would you do so much endeavor and so austere for a life in the future when you don't know if that's there, but you know that your enjoyment now is you experience. Therefore, beg, borrow, or steal to get ghee, right? So at least you can say, you know, that's why we call him a Vedic, because, you know, he at least accepts that ghee has some value, right? Like that.
This Kapila, when he recommends the process of yoga, means he does not accept the process of karma?
No, he may accept karma. Most of them is a Charvak, he's outside, you know, like that. But the six, then they're all based on the Vedas. So they always accept karma, they accept there's a supreme, but they don't put any emphasis on the supreme at all. You know, he has his job and that's it.
But just to analyze him, like Sankhya Yoga, means he just analyze in a, without having any... he understands the reaction?
No, they understand reaction. The point is I take rebirth because I have to take birth again to get the results of my previous action, right? That's just action and reaction. So if I analyze things very carefully, then I will stop performing action. And when I stop performing action, there's no reaction, therefore there's no rebirth. That's their idea. But the problem is it won't work because the jiva is always active. So even if he does it temporarily, he will become active again in the future and get back into karma. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's why the Jaimini can defeat these other four schools. Because it's more based properly on following the whole lifestyle. It's more inclusive. Well, the other four are very specific areas. Taking shelter of the philosophy that everything is illusion, the Jainas preach against the Vedas. Right? So now he's talking about the atheists. Right? Everything's illusion, so therefore the Vedas, you know, why should we follow the Vedas? It's all illusion. The atheist Charvak had no respect for the Vedic knowledge. Right? His is just, it's all, why worry about it? Just enjoy yourself. And similarly, the Buddhist Gotama does not worship the Lord, but instead thinks in terms of human beings. Right? It's just the human element. Being human, being good, being nice. Right? Because something has to be there to create being good. Right? All these philosophies are against the Vedas, sometimes directly and sometimes in a hidden way. Therefore, the wise man, knowing that belief in these philosophies makes one an offender, completely avoids them. Right, so here's all these against the Vedas. Sometimes directly means as a follower of that point, and sometimes in a hidden way. You don't know that they're speaking that philosophy. Right? So one has to be very careful. One other philosophy... Yes?
Maharaj, there is mentioned about these Buddhists who only think about human beings. So that refers to pranamaya. So, these six systems of Vedic knowledge, are they situated somewhere in the five different levels of consciousness?
Yeah. They'll be in the five levels of consciousness. Yeah.
Are they like under Manamoy, or are they...
It means it's just wherever they fall, each one would fall different. Vaisheshika is just atoms, so, you know. You're that mix that you're using pranamoy to get to anandamoy, you know, and so you just have all these funny mixes. Does that make sense?
Each one is missing because.
Oh no! So many are missing.
But six personalities, but there are five beings.
No, but in the six schools means these they've all means. Here are six personalities who it stands out. These other ones are also, you have the six schools, you know, which have six personalities, but these are ones that become prominent in the way of, you know, religious practices, you know, who nowadays has heard of a Nyayist or a Vaisheshikist. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, that kind of element. So these are what will be prominent. But otherwise, it's Gotama, meaning the not Buddhist Gotama, right? You know, and then Vaisheshika is Kannada. Yeah, then you have Patanjali, Kapila, Jaimini, and Shankara. And that would be the six schools like that. But here he's just going through six personalities.
This sixth one is the next paragraph.
One other philosophy to be avoided is that of the Mayavadis. Right? So that would be the sixth. So in other words, all these others, then they have a breakdown of those. In other words, you have the natural school, but then you have then how that gets applied and ends up as something else. Right? So in this way, then you end up with these other personalities. But that's why it's sometimes in a hidden way, sometimes directly. So some aspects are more direct, some things are more hidden. Like that. Okay, we're over time. So we'll continue with the Mayavadis tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sama Veta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prem.